Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
Anytime things don't go right is not when you're going to get the narcissist at their best. They're combative fighters. I always say narcissists are street fighters because they're fighting for their lives the way they think it. Anytime somebody's kind of honing in on that their sense of insecurity, they defend it because it's so fragile.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life.
Hi, Rebecca Zung here with you again, and I am the top 1% divorce attorney and the best-selling author of the books Negotiate Like You Matter and Breaking Free, a Step-by-Step Divorce Guide. And today, we are going to be talking about how to litigate with a narcissist, something I know very well, but I don't usually have one of the top experts from the psychologist's perspective with me. And so Dr. Romani is here with me today, and we are going to talk about the kinds of things that they do in litigation and what to do about it.
So in this second episode in the series, we're going to be talking about this idea of litigating with a narcissist. So I think, you know, again, I'm going to bring the psychology perspective, but again, your genius is in the legal, which I know certainly my subscribers and viewers often don't get that perspective. So from where yours, can you tell us, explain to us what we mean when we say to litigate with somebody?
Well, that means that there's a lawsuit going. Mm-hmm. And once the lawsuit is filed, and it could be, you know, very often it's in divorce, and that's obviously mm-hmm. the perspective that I have. But, you know, I've also helped people who are litigating with a business partner, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who you've had a business mm-hmm. with, and mm-hmm. now you're breaking up, and maybe a lawsuit has been filed with that. So litigation means that the court is involved mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in some way, and there is, you know, discovery mm-hmm. requests going back and forth mm-hmm. for documents. There may be depositions involved, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. But it just means that there is some kind of a lawsuit involved. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay. So what any of us know about a narcissist is that, first of all, litigation is, in most cases, going to be an unpleasant process, right? No, regardless of the reason, and certainly most of all in divorce, is that something's not going right, so the legal system had to get involved. Anytime things don't go right is not when you're going to get the narcissist at their best. They're combative fighters. I always say narcissists are street fighters mm-hmm. because they're fighting for their lives the way they think it. Anytime someone's honing in on that their sense of insecurity, they defend it because mm-hmm. it's so fragile. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what I found so genius about some of the things you'd raised in a conversation we're having is, what are the things you need to look out for mm-hmm. when you are litigating with a narcissist? And you had this sort of long list of thoughts that we can build upon. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't thought of this. Some of it I talk about with clients, but I hadn't used your terminology because mm-hmm. I'm not an attorney. And so I was sort of framing it in these different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. But we can see how this personality style is going to make litigation, whether in divorce or anything else, such a nightmarish process mm-hmm. because they don't fight fair. They're naturally manipulative.
Yep.
They are so deeply entitled. Mm-hmm. They're so grandiose and entitled that they literally believe these rules don't apply to them. Like, what is this court that is expecting me to be accountable? Like, they really can't believe that there's a sense that someone's going to hold them accountable. And for people I've worked with who are long-term survivors of narcissistic abuse, they'll often say, this person was never held accountable. That's half the problem. And sometimes for narcissists, it starts when they're kids. They weren't accountable as kids,
right.
as adolescents, as adults, at work, at home, anywhere. So it's almost like these little monsters that get created that turn into big monsters.
Yeah.
So can you lay out, because I'm curious, what these things are that narcissists do in litigation that make it so difficult?
Well, so the first one is that they're going to try to win at all costs. And we talked about this a little mm-hmm, bit yeah. In another video. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you're not for a narcissist, then you are against them. In mm-hmm. their world, You know, you are one or the other. Mm-hmm. You can't be both. It can't be that we're just nicely going our mm-hmm. own directions and it's, you know, we can come up with some kind of middle of the road agreement. You're not dealing with a rational person. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to remember that this person is probably going to be out to get you. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of hard to say that mm-hmm. because, you know, this person will want to hurt you. Mm-hmm. They will mm-hmm. want to get you in some way. And winning to them is not what winning might be to mm-hmm. you. It mm-hmm. may not be yeah. the rational thing. Even if you just, if they give you three choices of something to choose from as far as settling the case, you say, okay, I'll pick number two. Well, now it's changed. You know, mm-hmm. and I tell people that all the time, you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, maybe we can just settle this between attorneys. You know, I'll send over a letter with my idea for a settlement, mm-hmm. and then the attorney will review it, and then they'll talk it over with the client, and then they send over mm-hmm. their idea for a settlement. But you're like trying to catch a wave and pin it down, mm-hmm. because as soon as you send that over, first of all, they probably won't respond at all. Mm-hmm. Just even getting them to respond, because now you're trying to control the process.
Yes,
so,
yes, yes.
So
yes.
they probably won't even yeah. respond. Mm-hmm. But if they do respond, it's going to be something so ridiculous that you're not going to agree to it. Even if they agree to it in a conversation in your house or something, and you mm-hmm. think that you're just memorializing mm-hmm. what you've agreed to, or you think you've agreed to a particular piece of the case, like, well, we agreed that this was going to be how we settle our assets. And then you send over that exact agreement. Well, now they've changed their mm-hmm. mind. But mm-hmm. they blame you. They're going to blame you for changing their mind. Well, it's because you changed on this. It's because you did this. You know, they're constantly projecting. Mm-hmm. So whatever their bad behavior was. And by the way, when you're dealing with narcissists who are the cause of the breakdown of the marriage, they cheated or whatever, the projection is 10 times worse than anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, projection's a defense that's designed to protect the psyche. So projection's always going to get magnified when the person actually feels culpable. If they're to blame for something for real, I mean, as it is, projection's going to happen on a day-to-day basis because they don't like themselves. But a lot of what you're describing, you go ahead and agree and they send it back and basically say no, is gaslighting. Mm-hmm. I didn't agree to that, but you did, you know, and that's your whole life. I mean,
right.
I think in many ways what I want to tell people, especially when you're going through a divorce process and that form of litigation, this is actually going to be a replay of your entire relationship on steroids.
Magnified.
That's it. That's
yes.
all it is. So it's everything that was done there. And I think, again, the biggest struggle on my side of things is working with people and they say, I can't believe he did this, and to which we both say, why not? This is exactly what we would have expected
right.
them to do.
Don't be surprised yeah. when they lie. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised when they manipulate everything that you say mm-hmm. or do. I just had a client last week. We have an agreement where the parties will do all of their communicating through an app. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. It's a co-parenting mm-hmm. app
yes.
that they're supposed
mm-hmm.
to use. Well, this guy sends my client, I'm representing the wife, mm-hmm. a text through the app mm-hmm. that says, this is to confirm our conversation that we just had when I picked up the child at your house, that you agreed that I get the child on your time sharing time next Saturday. Thanks for agreeing to that. That conversation never happened.
It's gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. never yep. Yep. happened. Mm-hmm. My client is freaking out. Like, mm-hmm. what do I say to that? I say, you respond. As we agreed, all conversations take place right mm-hmm. here in this app, and you mm-hmm. never asked me that, and that conversation mm-hmm. never took place. Mm-hmm. Sorry, mm-hmm. you know.
And then what the narcissist then does as part of the larger gaslighting landscapes, they'll say, really? Are you so petty that this is what it's come down to this, that we have to use the little app, and they'll have contempt for the app? And then and what happens is the person who is the narcissist abuse victim will doesn't want to be viewed as petty. I mean, listen, somebody who's being abused by a narcissist also has their sense of identity. And, you know, when you do have to make sure every I is dotted and every T is crossed and it's your day-to-day life and it's your kids, you know, that's where what I always say that what takes why narcissistic relationships happen and have these horrible endings is this sort of gradual creep. It's that, it's all right, fine, all right, yes, okay, you told me, yeah, she wants to do it. And then you agree to that one time out of the app, and now you're off to the races. So that kind of gradual limit testing. And I say this, I actually say this in my book, in my most recent book, you know, a relationship with a narcissist is death by a thousand cuts, because it's just every little thing that happens over time that you just relent and you agree and you're like, oh my gosh, and I can't believe this is happening. But it's things like, no, you hold your ground. We said the app. And if that makes you feel like, ick, am I being too rigid? No, it's the only way you're going to survive this process.
That's a very good point. So boundaries is one of the things that I actually, is my antidote to a lot of these things. And that is, you know, and sticking to your word. I mean, and a lot of times, by the way, in litigation, you know, especially if it's a post-judgment litigation, so you've already now been divorced and you're asking now for more child support, or you're asking to modify, or you're asking to enforce the agreement in some way, they really go to great lengths to get you to drop that litigation, and because they don't think it's necessary or whatever. And so even if they are $30,000 behind on their child support, or, you know, even if they're wrong, they're going to try to get you to drop that litigation. What I'm going to say to you is, if you drop the litigation, now you have defined that, you know, that 100%. That's how far they need to go. So next time they're going to be that much worse to get you to give in. So you're defining, it's, it's really like behavior modification for narcissists.
But the challenge is that the behavior, unlike a dog or a cat or a child, where you can make an impact through behavior modification, it doesn't work with narcissists. So you're not, it's not so much behavior modification as much as putting down a hard and fast boundary. It's a bit like letting a kid cry it out to sleep. Like, it's the most painful thing you go through because it feels uncomfortable for you. And after a lifetime, years and years, decades and decades, whatever it was, of giving in to the narcissist, it can feel very artificial to all of a sudden change the rules and stand your ground. Because throughout the course of the relationship, most people kept giving in and capitulating
to the narcissist. But the narcissist will be stunned.
Oh, absolutely.
They will be put off their game when you start standing up to them.
Oh, absolutely.
And here's the real secret that's not so secret. And that is, the narcissist is actually the most afraid person in the whole wide world. And so if you stand up to it, it's sort of like that bully. You know, I don't know if any of you saw A Christmas Story, but you know, that bully, like when the kid with the glasses actually beats up the bully ends up running away. So if you, you know, gather enough leverage, if you put, you know, put together a case with the right strategy, and you know, and it's very methodical, you know, you have to have patience and you have to have perseverance in this process. But if you are able to have those two things, you will be able to get what you want. It's just not going to be in their face, get what you want.
I agree.
Because when you're litigating with a narcissist, when you're negotiating with anybody, you have to have both sides want to feel valued. That's why my book is called Negotiate Like You Matter. Matter is an acronym for the process. But all people want to feel seen, heard, and know that they matter. But narcissists, it's like 50,000 times more than anybody else. And so you have to be giving value to them as you're asking for something. So sometimes when you're litigating with a narcissist, you have to, you know, let's say you want him to take, I'm just going to use a him, but it could be a her, to take Johnny for a field trip or something. And, you know, you say, well, you're so good at whatever it is. You're really good at golf and it's a golf field trip and, you know, and Johnny would love to have you there and whatever. So you're getting what you want, but you're having to, and I know what most of you are thinking, like, I can't stand the guy. It's like, I think he's a jackass, whatever. But you have to do a certain amount of massaging of their ego if you want to get what you want.
Well, I call it narcissistic fluffing. And you've got to become a fluffer if you're going to make this work, folks. Like, you really do. And it is, I always tell people, in fact, I was talking with someone recently and she really put it nicely. She's like, you got to take a Silkwood shower afterwards. You know, if you remember that movie, the woman who worked in like a nuclear plant, and she had to, you have to take these big chemical showers afterwards. I often tell my clients, after you have to do an episode of narcissistic fluffing, whether in your relationship, in a divorce, at work, I say, please have a ritual you go home to. It might literally be taking a shower or a bath where you're like intentionally like, I am getting this ick off of me that I had to play that game. But it is survivalist. And for a lot of people, they say this doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel good. No, these relationships don't feel good. But in some ways it might, you have to have a true north. And that true north could be something that your kids need or want. It could be time. Ultimately, and you know how I feel about this, even with the most difficult narcissistic co-parent, if you are never to throw that other parent under the bus. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't do it. You just don't do it. It's too confusing for your kids. When your kids are adults and come to you and want to call that parent out as a narcissist, that's a whole different conversation.
But that's a form of parental alienation, yes. Which mm-hmm. is a form of child abuse.
Yes.
And Dr. Amy Beaker, who I've interviewed on my show, so my listeners will recognize her. Mm-hmm. She's the foremost authority on parental alienation in the world. And she actually says it's harder for children to get over the effects of parental alienation than it is for them to get over sexual abuse.
Wow.
It is, I mean, those are her words, not mine. I'm not the psychologist. But it is 100% child abuse. Don't do it as much
right.
as you
Yes, may. Even if it's being done to you, and we're going to be talking about that.
Yes.
But you talk about other things, too. Like, you talk about manipulation and how that impacts the process of litigating. They're natural manipulators. It's, remember, when you don't have normal access to empathy or you choose not to use it, when you are entitled, but you're not skilled enough and not secure enough to make a direct ask, you get your needs met through manipulation. Okay, that's why they manipulate. They mm-hmm. do not have the skill set to say, this is what I want, this is what I need. You need to value yourself to say, this is what I need or want.
Right.
They don't, so they manipulate.
They assume that they won't be able to get what they want.
Yes, which is kind of sad when you really
yes.
think about it.
Yeah.
But it's not so sad when they start manipulating you. That just
right.
doesn't feel good.
Right.
So how do you litigate in the face of being manipulated?
Well, and this is going to sound bad, maybe, but in some ways you kind of have to manipulate the manipulator.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And it's sort of like the example I just gave where I said, you know, oh, you're so good at or whatever, mm-hmm. or, you know, if they give you choices, you know, maybe clarifying. So, because a lot of times the choice that they're giving you is so unfair mm-hmm. and so stupid and so... You say it back to them like, okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're asking me to agree to is blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And just sometimes by holding up that mirror to them,
yes.
they know
yes,
that it
absolutely.
Sounds ridiculous.
Yes,
and so
yes.
they start backtracking
yeah.
from
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but you have to be very careful because don't say it with sarcasm.
No.
You don't say it with any emotion, mm-hmm. you know, if I were to give one biggest piece of advice, and it's the hardest piece to take, is to keep your emotion out of it because you can't take anything personally that they do because it's not about you.
It's not about you, it's about them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But, you know, they'll make it all about you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's really hard not mm-hmm. to take it personally if they're saying, you know, you're a deadbeat dad mm-hmm. or you're a horrible mm-hmm. mother, you know, because you're going to want to defend yourself. You're mm-hmm. going to want to go, you think I'm a horrible mother? I've been the one, you know, I'm mm-hmm. sitting here with them now. I just mm-hmm. took her to the dentist appointment. I just signed her up for soccer. Don't go
Don't engage. I always say don't engage. And that's a part of it. I say don't engage, don't defend, don't personalize, don't explain. That's your sort of narcissistic survival manual that all of you have already heard a million times from me. But, it does, I think that the idea of watching your tone becomes critical. And, you know, listen, I know no one can ever stop an emotional state. Emotions are natural. You never want to keep them. You never want to bottle them up. But you've got to learn how to channel them. And watching tone becomes critical because, ironically, it's almost like a way a dog can hear frequencies the rest of us can't hear. Narcissists can hear tone inflections the rest of us can't. But, you know, excuse me? And you're like, excuse me, what are they saying? But it can be a blink of an eye. It can be a tiny bit of tone. It could be your body language at a moment. They're going to pick up on it. And so you almost need to train yourself in what I call sort of a hostage negotiator voice, which is very calm, very tempered, very consistent. But some of them will also take umbrage at that. And I've had many
of
my
clients. Oh, they do, of course.
When they go back and they start dealing with the narcissist with the tools I've given them saying, oh, so you're better than me now? And it's interesting that they go there because they realize now they're being outplayed. And so
right.
that's what's
And that's
happening
when you just too. Say, I don't think
yeah.
that I'm better than you. You just mm-hmm. respond. And the way I usually phrase it is you just look at it as if you're looking at a two-year-old having mm-hmm. a temper tantrum mm-hmm. on the floor. You don't mm-hmm. feel like going down there and having a temper tantrum
right,
with
right,
them.
Right.
You're just observing mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And so that's you're just kind of just observing mm-hmm. the situation. Mm-hmm. be prepared that they're going to obstruct at every possible angle. So they're not going to give you the discovery that you ask for. Yep. They're going to make you work for every single bank mm-hmm. statement, every single piece of information. Anything that they think that you want, mm-hmm. that's what you're not going to get. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, going back to the manipulator, mm-hmm. You just have to act like the thing that means the most to you, you don't care about the thing that, mm-hmm. you know, when you're putting together your entire global package of what you want, decide what you want, then ask for a hell of a lot more than that, mm-hmm. and be prepared for what mm-hmm. you're going to give away. Yeah. And then when you give that away, act like it was the worst possible thing, like you're cutting off your mm-hmm. arm.
Yes.
You know, if you think you're going to get the satisfaction that the person knows that you got what you wanted, yep. and you're never going to settle, it's never going to happen.
Well, and one of the best tales I have about this, I remember working, a malignant narcissistic father, you know, really, really beaten down mother. He had many children, and it was a horrific, horrific divorce. And I remember there was that time I said, just, you know, she had texted me and she said, listen, here's the deal. And it was basically, the long story short was, she wanted the children on a particular weekend very much because of a family event. It was supposed to be her weekend, but he had sort of browbeaten her into, you know, dividing the weekend up in an odd way that would throw off this family event. And I said to her, and so he insisted, no, I'm entitled to this time until this time, rah, 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 bully, 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 entitled. And I said to her, what you've got to do is text him and say, wonderful, this works out so great for me because my girlfriends are having like this big party and we're all going out to this new wine bar. So the timing is great. I'm so glad you have a good weekend. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. I can't take them. What are you trying to take advantage of me? And I was like, and then she got the kids and they had a wonderful family event. So you have got to, like I said, narcissistic people are like knock knock jokes. They're silly and you laugh at them kind of silly, but they're ridiculous. And it was so easy to see what he was trying to do, but she knew his Achilles heel. He couldn't stand the idea that she was ever having fun.
Yeah.
I said, so let him think that what him having the kids means she's going to have fun. Done.
Brilliant.
And then she's used that gambit more than once. And believe it or not, homie never figured it out. So it worked out great.
Well, and another thing you could do is like, you know, massage their ego and say, oh, you know, mm-hmm. my family will realize what a great dad you mm-hmm. are. Everybody thinks so highly of you. And you know, so, you know, if you massage that ego a little mm-hmm. bit and they're doing it because now they're going to get credit for it somehow mm-hmm. by looking mm-hmm. like amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, that's another way that you could potentially get it done too.
Coming up, more on how to beat a narcissist in court with special guest Dr. Romani.
But what narcissists will do is they'll use the system as a sword. So every possible motion they can dream up, the minute your discovery is one day late, they're filing a motion to compel. They're filing custody evaluations. They're filing vocational evaluations. They're going to file a motion for exclusive occupancy. They're going to threaten to depose everyone at your office. They're going to threaten to bring your parents into court, to, you know, your elderly mother who's on oxygen, I'm deposing her.
Not everyone needs full representation by an attorney on retainer. In fact, sometimes lawyering up can make things worse. At Hello Divorce, you get the best of all worlds. You get technology and legal professionals. You get some help along the way, and you get to do the parts yourself that you want to do yourself. Just $99 a month, cancel at any time. You can use their divorce navigator, think TurboTax for divorce, to prepare all of your legal forms. Right now, it's available in California, but it will be expanding soon to other states. Sign up free and get a 15-minute free intro call and access to loads of curated resources, tools, and worksheets designed to make the divorce process affordable, transparent, empowering, and successful. Use the code HELLO50 to get $50 off toward anything you'd like. Just go to hellodivorce.com to get started today. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.hellodivorce.com. winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear more of Rebecca's conversations with Dr. Romani, including, why is negotiating with a narcissist so difficult?
So you can't go at it like a rational person. Rational people say, let's just find some middle ground and we can settle and we can have an agreement. That will never happen when you're dealing with a narcissist.
And now we return to today's show.
Another thing you've spoken about is this idea of entitlement and using the court system as their sort of their, almost like their personal hammer to punish other people.
Yeah, so they'll file any motion they possibly can dream up. Mm. So it actually takes a lot more courage to sit down and have a real conversation with a person.
Of course.
Because then you actually have to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You actually, have to be prepared to give up stuff and things like that. But what narcissists will do is they'll use the system as a sword. Mm-hmm. So every possible motion they can dream up, the minute your discovery is one day late, they're filing a motion to compel. They're filing custody evaluations. They're filing vocational evaluations. They're going to file a motion for exclusive occupancy. They're going to threaten to depose everyone at your office. They're going to threaten to bring your parents into court to, your elderly mother who's on oxygen. Yeah. I'm deposing her. Mm-hmm. Nothing is left untouched. There's no thing that I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. There's no bar that's so low that I won't cross or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they're
sort of equal opportunity harassers at that point. And
right.
I think a lot of people get almost bowled over in the shock of it all.
Right.
Of like, you're deposing who, you're sending this. I remember even getting once caught in the crosshairs of a very, very toxic divorce and watching the ex, the now ex, literally he was sending subpoenas. He was having people served all over town, and he sadly was an attorney too. And he had limitless money. So he was subpoenaing people all over Los Angeles, all over the country, and it was, to me, it was a grotesque, first of all, I was like, what attorney was willing to sign up to represent this mess?
They'll take the money.
Believe
me. So, you can always find somebody to take the money. My dad used to say the percentage of idiots per population is the same wherever you go. So you'll always find a lawyer that will take the money.
Yep.
People will say, well, how can their lawyer believe them? How can they be saying this stuff? Why isn't their lawyer telling them? Well, their lawyer is a paid mouthpiece. That's what they're there to do. There's lawyers who have ethics and who aren't willing to go certain places.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the things you had talked about, and I think this is one that often gets lost, is having an attorney who gets narcissism. I know when people come to me and say, divorce, legal question, I'm like, not my area, but you need to make sure your attorney gets this. They've gone so far, my wise clients have put me on the phone with their attorney. And I'm like, do you get this? Mm-hmm. And then I'll have the client in the room with me so we can lock eyes. And I'll usually say, let this attorney go. They don't get it. And so I will grill the attorney to make sure they actually understand what this personality pattern is. Mm-hmm. And if they don't seem to be getting it, it's just not going to work. So what kinds of questions would you advise someone, you're an attorney, to ask an attorney to see, do they get this?
I think questions you can ask, how many people have you dealt with that have narcissism, or how many people have you represented, and what has been the outcomes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can ask those kinds of questions. But I think more so it's going to be a gut feeling and it's going to be feel. Like if you are telling the person what your experience has been, how you, how this person has victimized you, how they act, even if they don't use the word narcissism, although a lot of people do nowadays, but even if the person just says, these are the types of things that they're doing, it should tip the attorney off as to the type of personality that they're dealing with. And these are the things that we're going to need to do. And, and I talk about having a strategy, creating leverage, being, anticipating. I use the term slay. So, you want to slay your negotiation. So strategy, leverage, anticipate, meaning you need to always be at least two steps ahead of what the narcissist is, is, and anticipating what they're going to do, and then focusing on you is the why. You know, your mindset, not being a victim, you know, get out of that victim mentality.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, you know, as long as you say he makes me feel like, you know, this is what's being done to me, I can never get what I want, all those kinds of things, or this person is always charms everyone, is smarter than everyone else.
Yeah, you're still nipping the Kool-Aid then. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So just talking to the, that attorney, and make sure you have an attorney that you feel like you have a rapport with, because you have to put your entire life in this person's hands. And, you know, I tell people all the time, if you don't think that I'm the one for you, there are plenty of other fish in the sea, and I've got plenty to do.
And I tell people, clients, the same exact thing.
Yeah. So,
but you, I mean, and in this, as you know, as we're coming sort of the end of our time, there's two last things that I really want to make sure people hear. You've been talking about leverage. You use that word a lot, especially in this issue of negotiating with a narcissist, and particularly in a divorce.
Yep.
What does that look like? What does that really mean? What does that look like?
So leverage to me is, in the context of negotiating with a narcissist, is the motivation, the incentive that you're going to give that that narcissist to come to the table and have a conversation with you. And, you know, figuring out what their pain points are, figuring out what their motivation is. Is it looking as good as possible? Is it saving their money? Is it what's their real motivation in all of this? Is it not letting the world know that they have herpes because they're a doctor in the community, which I've had that situation? What's going to be the thing that's going to motivate them to come to the table? And it may be stuff that you gather along the way. It may be a text message here. It may be an inconsistency there. It may be a lie that they told under deposition, and now you have proof that it was a lie. Things like that. I mean, it may be, you know, you're building a wall around this person to the extent that by the time you get to actually have a conversation about how to resolve the case, they feel completely boxed in. And one thing that you should know is that the narcissist acts the worst right before they're ready to give in.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's, you know, and I try to reassure my clients on that. Now, obviously, in this idea of creating leverage, that's something that typically happens with an attorney. When I work with my clients, I talk about something called their true north. And I say, your true north can be anything. For some people, their true north is literally their freedom. For some people, their true north is time with their children. For other people, you know, their true north is getting an apology. Like, it's going to be different depending on the person. And for us, a lot of the work is around that, because what it does is it takes some of the wind out of the sails of how toxic this experience is. I said, once you can focus on that fixed point on the horizon or in the sky, then you know what you're navigating to. And it makes all of this make sense. We know that suffering can be endurable if you can find meaning and purpose in it. And say, you know what? I am enduring this. I am doing these things, gaining leverage, working with my attorney. But my true north is my kids. And like, listen, narcissistic divorces always do a number on kids. I'm not even going to let anyone retain the naive assumption that this divorce does not do a number on kids.
Well, I mean, even having a narcissistic parent doesn't.
It does a number on a kid. Whether you exactly. So either way, your poor kid is already facing a difficult journey,
right.
And that's something I take on in my content and what happens those different pathways. But it's a, you know, this is people say, you know what, I know this experience is going to do a number on my kids, so I'm really focused on making this as non-contentious as possible, yes, getting the leverage, but also creating as calm and serene a space for these kids in the midst of the storm for them to stay sane. So it's like that balancing act between what I'm doing in my office and what Rebecca's doing in her office to get you to that sane ending for you and whoever else is being affected by this process.
And I just want to make one last point before we wrap up here, and that is that, and I've made this point before, but it's worth repeating, and that is that just because you want leverage doesn't mean that means you're a fighter, that means you're being difficult, that means you're ramping it up or whatever. The paradox is that if you don't want to fight, if you want the case to settle amicably, you have to have leverage against the narcissist.
Yeah.
Or you won't be able to do that.
And I think that's such an important point. And I'm really glad Rebecca made that point, because this idea that seeking out leverage is not contentious. It may be the only path to something that even resembles an amicable ending to this. So I think that it's finding that balance. Again, anyone who's been through one of these relationships has been through a lot of contention for a long time. It's a slow soul death to be in one of these relationships. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is, again, we could talk probably for hours about this idea of how to litigate with a narcissist. Apparently the punchline to this joke is, it's not easy. Yeah. And anyone would know that if they've even gotten into one argument with a narcissistic individual. So any parting words?
Just, you know, be ready for the fight of your life, mm-hmm. but just, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. be patient and persevere.
Yeah. I think that's it. And again, that's where it always comes back to my central tenets: realistic expectations, radical acceptance. Once you get there, and you have to remind yourself that, it becomes daily practice multiple times a day. Write it on the landing screen of your phone if you need to. But that, okay, he's behaving foolishly, she's behaving erratically. Of course she is. And the sun rose in the east this morning. Everything's exactly as it should be. So again, thanks for tuning in to this episode. We hope it has answered a lot of questions and probably raised more than it answered. Don't worry, we're going to have an answer for some of that to you. We're going to have an answer for some of that for you as well as we go on to our other episodes, really, really doing a deep dive into divorcing, negotiating, litigating with narcissists and other high conflict personalities.
Thanks so much for joining us today on this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. And I'm Rebecca Zung, and it's been my pleasure to have Dr. Romani here with us on part two of this incredible series on how to deal with negotiating with a narcissist. In this episode, we focused on litigating with a narcissist. Make sure you watch the next episode, which will be the do's and don'ts of litigating with a narcissist. If you haven't already, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you don't miss that next episode. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.